podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everyone, and welcome along to the Punts podcast here with William Hill. Good to have your company on this edition of The Punt. We have FA Cup fifth round action coming up. We'll go through five of the televised games this weekend in the company of Derek McGovern and Andy Excel in a couple of moments' time. Pete Farris will give you a bet in the Championship. We've got Gav Pushlowski on League One, Al Ross on League Two, and we have Sam Norris giving you his best bet in Italy this weekend as well. We've also got Mark Ogden, the senior football writer at ESPN. We'll talk about what happened midweek in the Champions League, and we'll discuss the curious case of Paul Pogba on this edition of the podcast as well. But first, as always, we're starting with the TV games, this time in the FA Cup. And sitting next to me in the studio, it's a rare treat for me, Andy Excel. Good morning to you, Andy.
If that's a treat, I don't want the rest of your life.
I'm easily pleased. Andy, it's good to have you with us. And Derek McGovern joins us as well. Derek, how are you, sir?
Yes, very well. Greetings, chap. Looking forward to these FA Cup matches. Six long odds-on favourites in eight matches. Isn't it great? It's like the unappetising fare you get when in those friendly internationals come around, you know, when you've got Holland against Andorra and matches like that. Oh, God.
Were you inundated with Valentines yesterday, Derek?
Yes, I was. It was indeed. And it was only 11 of them did I send. I actually got one unaccounted for. Someone blind, obviously.
Let's get stuck into this week. We'll start with Chelsea versus Hull, which is the game on Friday night, 8 p.m. kickoff. This one, Chelsea 2-9 to win it. The draw is 5-1 with Hull in the betting at 12-1. The enhanced odds: Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to win 2-0, 3-0, or 4-0 was 4-1. That's been enhanced to 5-1. And Jared Bowen to score and Hull to win was 18-1. That's been enhanced to 25-1. Derek, Chelsea put their recent Premier League woes behind them with a win against West Brom at home. They beat them 3-0. But the man who starred in the previous round against Newcastle won't be in the lineup against Hull on Friday night because Amishi Batshuayi, who's often been a factor in the FA Cup for Chelsea, he's made the move to Borussia Dortmund. I think it'll be intriguing to see who Antonio Conte selects here because they've got Barcelona coming to town on Tuesday night and then they've got back-to-back away games against the two Manchester clubs in the Premier League coming up. So this has got to be pretty low down on his priority list.
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think he'd look at it as a bit of an afterthought, the FA Cup, but the position Conte finds himself in, I don't think he can afford to mess this one up at home, especially. I mean, they're still in the doldrums, Chelsea, but Hull are in an even worse position. They're in Hull, and they're 21st in the Championship, and have lost 9 of their 16 away league games. There, that's all the research I'm prepared to do on your behalf, Dave. I can't think why Chelsea won't win this. They just can't. You know, if they were flying in the Premier League, you know, banging the race for the top four. I mean, they still are, but they're struggling. You might think, yeah, they'll give this game up, much the same as they did against Bradford in the FA Cup under Jose Mourinho a few years ago. But no, this has got to be... Conte's position will almost become untenable if they don't win this, and they'll win this. They had a bit of a cakewalk against West Brom when I thought they'd slip up last week. Chelsea at 2-9 makes no appeal, obviously. No one's going to be backing that. But Chelsea to win without conceding, I know it's still heavy odds on, but you don't feel as bad about yourself if you lose it that way.
Chelsea to win 2-0, 3-4 here with William Hill. Chelsea have progressed from 9 of their last 10 fifth round FA Cup ties. Their only loss in that spell came against Manchester City in 2014. And Hull City, Andy, have bigger fish to fry as well, given they are 21st in the Championship.
Yeah, 1 point above relegation. They've got more worries than Chelsea, and you wouldn't be thinking they'd be trying much here. So I'm kind of going along the same track as Derek, but if I was digging one out, I'd say Chelsea would want to get the job done early. So the double result, you might, is about 8-15 for them to win both half-time and at full-time.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the way to go on this one.
On to Sheffield Wednesday versus Swansea. Again, this is a TV game on Saturday. Saturday, 12:30, this one. Sheffield Wednesday, 23-10 to win it. The draw, 23-10, with Swansea in the market at 6-5. We do have enhanced odds available on this game. Jordan Ayew to score and Swansea to win was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And Swansea's form graph continues to track an upward curve at the moment, Andy, following the appointment of Carlos Carvalhal. Swansea unbeaten, now in eight in all competitions, and they knocked eight past Notts County in the FA Cup replay at the Liberty just over a week ago. And Carvalhal has the opportunity to exact revenge on the club that fired him on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, you'd think he'd be motivated. It's a question of how he gets his players motivated again, because Swansea are still looking at, you know, they've had some good results, but they're not out of trouble by any means. So what sort of team? It's that weekend, isn't it? It's guess the team weekend. So does he get the players up for it? The key you mentioned there in the Notts County thing was they knocked eight past them in a replay, and I think they might have to do the same here. I might look at a draw here at 23-10.
23-10 for the draw. Sheffield Wednesday, by the way, haven't beaten a top-flight opposition in the FA Cup since their 1993 semi-final win over Sheffield United. They've drawn 5 and lost 12 since then. Derek, how do you view this?
Well, I'm thinking about the opening credits to the punt every week, and I'm going to make a couple of lines from that. You've got one team in great form against another team who just aren't very good. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it. It's Swansea all day long. And the more I look at it, the more certain I am that Swansea at 6-5 is the best bet I'll ever strike. That doesn't mean it'll win, but I think the certainty, yeah, I really do. Sheffield Wednesday, their last 6 home games in the Championship, they've lost 4 and drawn 2. That tells me they're a side going nowhere except out of the cup. I think Swansea will be up for it because the manager, you know, he's going back to his old club, wants to do a number on them. And why spoil the momentum of what's happened in recent weeks? They've beaten Arsenal, they've beaten Liverpool, they knocked eight out of Notts County. Why spoil that momentum by fielding a shadow side in this? It'd be criminal to do that, and I don't think he will.
For those listening for the first time, there's one of those bets from Derek every single week, by the way. So just temper that enthusiasm.
I'm picking up a big trend of cross-Pennine hatred as well. Anybody this side of the Pennines, he's going against.
Swansea to win the game 6-5 is one of Derek's best bets ever ahead of the FA Cup fifth round clashes this weekend. Let's move on to Huddersfield versus Manchester United. This intrigues me, this fixture. Huddersfield are 13-2 to win it. The draw 7-2. Manchester United 4-11. Steve Mooney to score and Huddersfield to win was 11-1. That's been enhanced to 14-1. And Jesse Lingard to score and Manchester United to win was 17-10. That's been enhanced to 9-4. Huddersfield have won just one of their last 13 games in all competitions against Manchester United, but crucially, that win came at the John Smith Stadium earlier this season when they beat United by 2-1. And Manchester United head off to Spain to take on Sevilla on Wednesday. We know how much Derek José Mourinho covets the cup competitions, but he's not going to deploy his battleships in this one, is he?
You wouldn't have thought so. You know, as those big games coming up next week, you can't imagine the FA Cup figures in his priorities. But looking at the way Man United are playing, I'm not sure what does this season. You're right about that game earlier this season, Huddersfield beat United. And it's one of those results that make you say, why didn't I predict that? Or it makes you pretend to everyone that you actually did. I couldn't see that result in a month of Sundays. But it's Man United, and you never know what kind of performance you're going to get from them. I've said all season Huddersfield are the worst team in the Premier League, right? And I've had two outcomes. It's really annoyed Huddersfield fans. In fact, both have contacted me this week. And after last week's 4-1 win over Bournemouth, it's made me look an even bigger chump than normal because they were sensational in that game. United are struggling, but they'd have to be as bad as I actually think they are to lose this one. And if you can understand what I'm trying to say with that sentence, you're a genius. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I want to be against United. I just wish it was anyone but Huddersfield playing them. You've got to say the home team are worth a bet here, haven't you? Given what happened last week, given the way Man United played against Newcastle, given the way that Huddersfield performed against Bournemouth, you just wonder, though, whether the manager's thinking, it's the league, you know, we've just got to stay up. Will he throw this game? I can't back Man United to 4-11 because there's too many imponderables. I can't back Huddersfield to 13-2 because they're absolutely useless. I'm going to go for the draw at 7-2.
I can't quite believe I'm taking a leaf out of Derek's playbook here, or a page out of his playbook. I think that these prices are incorrect. I think Huddersfield are majorly overpriced this weekend at 13-2. I think Manchester United will field a team with the likes of Scott McTominay and Ander Herrera in midfield. I think that Marcus Rashford might start up front. I think Huddersfield are a sensational price at 13-2, Andy.
I tend to agree. Derek said he's been contacted by both Huddersfield fans. I bet they didn't send him a Valentine. Yeah, I'd be with Huddersfield at 13-2. They might not play a full-strength side, but it might be good enough to win against the Shadow United team. And one or two of them might even be protecting themselves with the Champions League in mind.
Yeah.
So Huddersfield for me.
Is this the sort of game, Andy, as well, where you're thinking from a bookmaking perspective, you're happy to lay Manchester United at 4-11? Do you still think the punters will be attracted by that price?
Derek's mentioned all the short prices this week, and that's again a factor here that probably makes United a bit shorter than we would normally have them, because this is the one we might be looking at to try and get out and avoid that terrible scenario on come on Huddersfield.
Back in Italy for the European Nap this week, and I'm looking to take on Spal once more as they face a nigh-on impossible task of Napoli away on Sunday. Napoli have ensured that this is the most exciting title race in years in Serie A. They've ensured that it's actually a race, and they currently hold a one-point lead over Juventus going into this weekend at the top of the tree. They've been relentless on home soil too. Only Juventus have beaten Napoli at home this season, and add to that list Inter and Fiorentina as the only sides to go there and avoid defeat. That ominous home form has caused them to be chalked up an unsurprisingly very short price this week, but given the nature of the opposition, there's a real scope for a heavy win. Spal are now 4 points off safety and have only mustered one win since October. That came against lowly Benevento, so they'll be bereft of confidence. And they wilted last week at home to Milan, who cruised to a 4-0 victory. They also conceded 5 at home to Lazio not long ago. That's a Lazio side who Napoli put 4 past just last week. With that collateral form line, I think a heavy Napoli win beckons, and Napoli -2 can be backed at 23-20, which will do as a nap for me this week.
Rochdale versus Spurs is next up. This is a 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Rochdale 12-1, the draw 13-2, with Spurs in the betting at 1-8. The enhanced odds: Ian Henderson to score and Rochdale to win is 28-1, enhanced to 40-1, and Fernando Llorente to score and Spurs to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0. That was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Harry Kane made his professional debut at Spotland back in January 2011. That was when he was on loan at Leyton Orient. And he's now an England striker, and he's got 7 in his last 5 FA Cup appearances. But I suppose the question here, Andy, is whether he will start in this game. He might do. I mean, he started against Wimbledon in the third round and in that first meeting with Newport as well. He wasn't needed for the replay at home. But it shows you how far Harry Kane's come in such a short space of time that made his debut at Rochdale for Leyton Orient in when on loan, and now he's starring in the Champions League.
Well, yeah, and he may well start, but just purely because it's the game after the Champions League rather than before, so they might. But it's just a game. Rochdale have probably won more games in the Cup than they've won in the league all season. I don't know what they're doing. Every round I put them up to get beat, and they get through. Do you know what? Lucas Moura, he's got to play in this game, hasn't he?
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
He's got to play.
That's so right. 13-10 to score at any time. You've got to be. He's got to start, hasn't he?
Derek's on to me. That's exactly where I was going. 13 to 10 anytime. When Derek McGovern can read your mind, you're in trouble, aren't you?
I think when you can read his, you're in deeper trouble, to be honest.
That's definitely true.
Thank God women can't read my mind. I'll be getting slapped every minute of the day.
Derek, they sometimes say in these FA Cup matches as well, the pitch is the great leveller. Let's just hope they've got it down for this game, because if you aren't aware of what's been happening at Rochdale's pitch, that it was waterlogged for their game against Fleetwood. That was postponed. And that was after they beat Millwall on that heavily sanded surface to set up this clash with Spurs as well. So the pitch might be the great leveller, Derek.
Well, yeah. I mean, in that and the fact that Tottenham can't, you know, if Tottenham play anything like a decent side, I'll be amazed, given, you know, what's happened in midweek. You've still got the second leg at Juventus, tie coming, big games in the league. There's no way in a million years Harry Kane will be starting this game, which makes that more a bet even better. The best thing I can say, I'm looking at Rochdale trying to think, is there any way that you can actually tip them? The bottom of the league, bottom of League One, and the only surprise there is I thought they were non-league now, Rochdale. The best thing I can say about them is that for the side bottom of their league, a goal difference of minus 11 is actually not that bad. So that's the best thing I can say about Rochdale. You look at the Spurs, you wonder what side Spurs are going to feel. And then you think, well, it doesn't matter because they're going to win this one. And they'll probably win it to nil as well. But the 1-8 to win, so I haven't even bothered looking at what Tottenham to win to nil is. It's probably, I don't know, 4-11, something like that. I'm going to go for Tottenham on the handicap because Rochdale, the bottom of League One, come on, the bottom of League One, and they're playing a side that they're one of the best in Europe. So Tottenham minus 2 goals is 23-20. Come on. It's going to be a great bet, hasn't it?
Tottenham to win to nil, by the way, Derek's 4-6. So not half as short as you thought it might be.
No, that's not a bad bet, that, actually. Why are we still going to score past them?
I'll tell you what, any Tottenham player that said to the manager, I fancy a bit of time on the beach, he might regret that.
Wigan versus Manchester City is the final game we're going to look at this weekend. This is actually a Monday night fixture, this one, 7:55 kickoff. Wigan 12-1, the draw 6-1, Manchester City a 1-7. Will Grigg to score and Wigan to win was 22-1. That's been enhanced to 33-1. And Sergio Aguero to score and Manchester City to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0 was 3-1, and that's been enhanced to 7-2. And Derek, Wigan are actually a point behind Shrewsbury now after back-to-back defeats in League One against Southend and Blackpool. And this is the fifth meeting between these two sides in the FA Cup as well. Wigan have won each of the last two, including in that FA Cup final back in 2013 as well, Derek.
Yeah, well, no one remembers that one because no one was watching that. I thought it was Wigan at Wembley and assumed it was the Challenge Cup final, so I switched over. Didn't even watch it. I mean, that was an amazing result, that. Absolutely amazing. But Wigan, that was under Roberto Martinez, wasn't it, Wigan? It was still being managed by him. It was under Martinez that season, wasn't it?
I think so.
It was. Yeah. They were... I like Wigan. I used to like watching Wigan in those days. They were great. You know, an attacking side, an attractive side. I don't know what's happened since then, of course. But the fact that they've lost their last two games makes me wonder, are they being just preparing for this game? Are they going to give their all in this game, even though they should be going for promotion? City have been putting decent sides out in the FA Cup, surprisingly. And you hear the manager, Guardiola, talking about, you know, the quadruple and things. You think he definitely wants it. The 1-7, you can't back that, can you? You can't be backing 1-7. But again, I've got to go for City with it. They've just gone to Basel, a Champions League side, and won 4-0. You know, why aren't they going to cover the handicaps in this game as well? I can't see any reason. City minus 2, it's like the Tottenham game. City minus 2, 23-20. Got to be on that. Because even if you play a complete second string side, it's a side that would be good enough anyway to finish in the top four of the Premier League. 23-20 minus 2 has got to be backed.
Okay, Derek going with the handicap again with the Premier League side. Wigan have won each of their last six FA Cup games at home now, with three of those wins coming against Premier League sides. They've beaten Palace, Bournemouth and West Ham. A different task entirely to take down Manchester City, Andy.
Oh, exactly. You know, have we ever seen... You know, we've talked all season about, have we seen a team this good? And when they're going away in Europe and winning by that margin, it tells you something about this. And I mean, I suspect the guy who most... Was it Ben Watson scored that goal in that cup?
Yeah,
it was, yeah.
He must have been delighted when this draw came out. He must be fighting people off for TV bookings. but I've got to be with City on this again, and I'll go even further than Derek's. Like, oh, sort of in the same area. -3 on a handicap, but a draw off that. So City to win by 3 is 15-4. And I think that sounds about the area it'd be in, like a 4-1, a 3-0, something like that. So 15-4 doesn't seem too bad for me there.
A change of music this week. It's Miami Sound Machine, all the way from 1988, back when Derek McGovern's jokes were funny. And Andy XL had his last winning nap. Well done to DK this week. A cracking nap. City to win, both teams to score. We also had winners from Gav Pudzielowski and from the Euro Boys. But the man that we're all saluting still. 4 in a row now. Luton, Swindon, Mansfield, and last week Crawley at 6-5. He's leading the Naps table. Congratulations, Al Ross.
Glad to have him back, Derek.
I preferred him when he was in hospital.
Fantastic. Let's get stuck into the Naps this week then. Can I lead us off this week?
Go on.
I want Huddersfield at 13-2. I think it's miles too big. I think they should be 7-2, 4-1 to win that game. So I'm taking Huddersfield at 13-2 as my best bet.
Derek can go next. Go on, Derek.
All right, I'm going to go for Swansea 6-5 to win at Sheffield Wednesday.
There you go. There you go with Huddersfield, Swansea at 6-5. And to finish a winning, fingers crossed, punt treble.
Lucas Moura to score any time at 13-10.
Oh, very good. I like this one. Lucas Moura to score any time goes in there as well. And that's treble this weekend here with William Hill. Pays 36.95-1. Huddersfield 13-2. Swansea at 6-5. And Lucas Moura to score any time at 13-10.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag YourOdds from William Hill.
Now joining us, the senior football writer at ESPN, Mark Ogden, is the FWA guest on the podcast this week. It's a warm welcome along to Mark. Good morning to you, Mark.
Hi, Dave.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Just back from Turin yesterday, so it's been a busy week.
Let's talk about the Champions League then. Fresh from what was a wonderful Spurs performance in Turin against Juventus. Tottenham Hotspur now 12-1 to win the Champions League here with William Hill. Behind Manchester City in the betting, who are 5-2. Give us your thoughts on that game with Spurs showing their spirit, their tenacity, their quality in coming from two goals down at a team that haven't conceded many times in the Champions League at home in recent seasons.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, after 9 minutes, the 2-0 down against Juventus, who have conceded one goal in the last 15 games, and apparently the last time they'd let a two-goal lead slip in the Champions League at home was back in 1999 when they lost to United. So, you know, we're talking maybe 20 years of Juventus having a great record there. So I thought that Spurs were dead and buried, and when Higuain missed a sitter on half an hour, it looked like they were clinging on, but they fought their way back into it. And you know, by the end of it, I thought a 2-2 draw, you know, they could have actually won the game. Spurs, they performed really well, and I just think that they showed, you know, real maturity that night. Certain players like Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli, Moussa Dembélé just showed they could cut it at that stage. So you know, obviously the second leg's still up for play because Juventus have got a lot of experience and they're not a team that's going to go to Wembley and just sit back and wait for it to happen. I think there's life in this title. I still think Spurs are the favourites to go through.
What was the reaction from the Italian press on the back of that? Were they resigned that they were going to end up being knocked out by Spurs, or is there still some feeling of optimism?
The main emotion is anger, to be honest. The post-match press conference with Allegri was very fiery and a lot of kind of recriminations being thrown out of the way. In Italy, Juventus is a huge club. They've won the last six Serie A titles, and there's a real kind of belief that they should have done better in the Champions League. And I think, you know, if you're outside of Italy and look at the competition they've had in the past against, you know, Real, Barcelona, you know, it's a different level. But Juventus are a massive club, and in Italy, it's regarded as a massive failure that they didn't win this game 3-0 or 4-0. So the ratings in Gazzetta yesterday morning were punishing. They were like, you know, 0.5 and 1. So they've really got stuck the boot in. But I think, you know, Juventus are a huge club and people kind of underestimate sometimes what a big club they are and what expectation that their support and the media kind of attach to them. They are the biggest club in Italy. They're a club that hasn't really punched its weight in the Champions League and European Cup over the years. But, yeah, they will travel to London with everybody expecting them to win because that's what Juventus tend to do.
Juventus 16-1 to win the Champions League here with William Hill. Spurs are into 12-1 now to take the European title this season. David, we'll come to Wednesday night very shortly because I know you want to talk about Liverpool's 5-0 thumping of Porto. But also on Tuesday night, we saw Manchester City beat Basel by 4-0. They are 5-2 favourites. They look faultless. And I think it says a lot about that team that a player of the class of Ilkay Gundogan isn't an automatic first choice. And they've handled the recent loss of Leroy Sané and Gabriel Jesus without blinking, City.
They're worthy favourites. They do look faultless. But to be fair, though, Dave, if you spent the kind of money City have spent in recent seasons, you should be faultless. If I was manager and I had that kind of dough, I'm sure my team would be favoured for the Champions League. But let's not decry what they've done. It was a great result in midweek. But I did say before that time, Basel, at this stage of the competition, practically amounts to a bye. You look at Liverpool's performance the following night. You know, it was arguably better than City's. But, you know, Porto, the standard of opposition. We used to think that the Champions League group stages, well, let's just get that out of the way and then the competition will really begin. Well, it hasn't, has it? Apart from the Tottenham game, it won't begin until the last 8 stage. I mean, when you started opening the competition up to teams finishing in the top 4, it meant you no longer had to be champions to be in it. Well, on the evidence of this week, you no longer have to be any good to be in it. Because the performance of Porto, they were so bad. For 45 minutes, I mistook them for Arsenal at Porto against Liverpool. They were shocking. And you just wonder. You wonder, given the money that the teams in the Premier League are spending now, whether we are... And then you look at the teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, you just feel that their era is coming to a close. You just wonder now whether another era of English domination of the Champions League is upon us.
That's a very interesting point that Derek makes because for years, Mark, when Sky Sports had their bill as the Premier League being the best in the world, people used to scoff at that. And now it might be actually true. The Premier League might be the best league in the world, Mark, at this moment in time, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly got the most depth, I think. I think, you know, the top six can probably beat anybody. Maybe the top five, let's take Arsenal out of that. But, yeah, I mean, I think the kind of the peak of the Premier League was probably 2008 when United played Chelsea in Moscow for the final. I think that was, you know, at that point, I think there's been four or five of the previous years that an English club had got to the final, if not won it. So... You know, it's not that long since English club dominated, but I do think that Derek's right, that certainly Real Madrid, that they're like an old team, they need a lot of money spending there, and they're coming to the end of an era. Same. Barcelona, you know, while they have Lionel Messi, I'd still make them favourites. They haven't lost a domestic game in La Liga this season. They've got Messi, they've got Suarez. You know, they're a fantastic attacking force. But like Derek said, the last 16 has looked a little bit imbalanced. I mean, there's been some... I don't think Chelsea fans would agree by saying it's an easy round. It's because obviously they've got Barcelona. I think City have had a good draw. Liverpool have had a good draw. We'll wait and see whether United have had a good draw with Sevilla. That could go either way. But, you know, I think once you get to the quarter-final stage, everybody will be praying to get Roma or Shakhtar Donetsk because beyond that, it is a really kind of tough examination of your ability to win it. And I know that City are favourites, but I'm just not sure when they get to the real kind of big games in the semi-finals whether they just lack a little bit of that Champions League experience, because we've seen it in the past. Certain clubs have a pedigree in the Champions League, and I count Liverpool in this. I think if Liverpool drew Man City in the quarter of the semi, I would fancy Liverpool because they have that knowledge they can beat the system. The Anfield thing is huge, and it's the same applies at the Bernabeu, the New Camp. These stadiums have, over the years, have become defined by what happens on European nights, and the Etihad Stadium hasn't got that, and I don't think it ever will because it just doesn't feel like one of those cauldrons. And I think Old Trafford's the same. There are certain grounds that have an extra edge of 12th man status at the latter stage of the Champions League, and if those clubs are in at that point of the competition, I think it will make a difference.
So your pick right now, Mark?
To win the Champions League, I would go for Barcelona on the basis that they've got Lionel Messi. But listen, I'm from Manchester, so it kind of pains me to say this, but I would never rule Liverpool out of the Champions League because I just think Anfield does have this... You can't put your finger on what it is, but I've been to Champions League nights at Anfield, and it's been not just a 12th man, a 13th and a 14th man, and I think that could play a big part in the next few rounds.
Barcelona 5-1, Liverpool 9-1. Derek, you'll know all about those Champions League evenings at Anfield.
Yeah, but 9-1 Liverpool is a poor price, isn't it? It really is. I mean, they're obviously in the quarterfinals now, but I wouldn't be backing them at those kind of odds. It's a shocker. I mentioned before this round began that Seville at 150-1 were not 100. You know, they probably won't get there. But if you're ever going, when you back 150-1 poke, you've got no chance. Basically, you're throwing your money away. I don't think you're throwing your money away with Seville there. I think they've been given an easy tie against Man United. I really do. I think it's very winnable for them. And because of the question marks about the big giant clubs, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, even Man City, who are the favourites, there's question marks about City. You know, I think this is a wide open competition this year, where really in previous seasons you couldn't have looked beyond, you know, Bayern, Barcelona, Real Madrid. Yeah, I'm gonna have a little daft each way dabble on Seville.
Okay, 150-1 here with William Hill. And now you mentioned Manchester United, Derek, briefly. Mark, it's becoming maybe an issue with Paul Pogba now. Graeme Souness was quoted as saying that Pogba plays like a schoolboy running after the ball in the playground. And there's definitely been some tension between him and Mourinho in recent weeks as well. What's your reading of that situation? Is it escalating the animosity between Mourinho and Pogba?
I won't suffice to say animosity, but I think certainly it's escalating because he's been dragged off in his last two league games and both away games which he's lost. Now, after the Spurs game, I did a piece on Pogba saying that he's the guy that United can't live with and they can't live without, because, you know, when he plays, he's a problem, because where do you put him in the team? You certainly not put him in the defensive team which he's been playing. He's a liability in that role. But also, when he doesn't play, as you saw when he was suspended in December and he missed the Man City game, they lack this kind of energy in midfield. So he's a player that they need, but they just haven't found a way to accommodate him in the team quite properly. And I think Mourinho's problem is that he doesn't have the resources in midfield to allow Pogba to play the freer role that he's better at. He's definitely not a box-to-box midfield in the classic style of Keane and Gerrard and even De Bruyne. He doesn't have that defensive side to his game, but he does have something. He does, for me, he's a midfielder that is the icing on the cake to a midfield that needs a bit of extra. He's not the guy that you build it around, because his responsibility defensively is non-existent. So in terms of, you know, his relationship with Mourinho, I think it's up and down. I don't think it's at any point where you could suggest it's broken. But also, you know, but let's say that the worst case scenario that United decide that he's not for them. Who will give them the money back on Paul Pogba? They paid £90 million for him 18 months ago. There's nobody in Europe that would pay that for Paul Pogba now, because they don't know what he is. They don't know what he gives. I mean, he's only 24, but if you had to say to somebody, what does Paul Pogba do? What is his biggest quality? You know, he's probably using his Twitter handle and dabbing. I can't think of it. You know, he can't head the ball, he can't tackle, he scores the odd goal, but he loses the ball a lot. He's a real kind of enigma, Paul Pogba. He's got something, but we could be talking all day and I couldn't say what it is.
Do you think Manchester United right now regret buying him then, Mark?
Depends who you ask. I think if you ask the commercial department, I think he's great because, like I say, he's big on Twitter. But no, listen, Pogba is a player that makes a difference to United. It's just sometimes it's a negative difference and other times it's a positive difference. I think if they were a better team, if he was playing for Man City and he had De Bruyne and Fernandinho behind him, we'd be talking about Pogba as the star of the season, because he would then not have the defensive responsibilities that he has at United. I just think at the minute he's playing the team that isn't up to his level. When he was at Juventus, he had people like Pirlo and Marchisio and Sami Khedira and Vidal playing alongside him, fantastic midfielders that would do a lot of the work for him. He doesn't have that at United, and he needs to find a way to add that to his game. I just don't think he's got it in him. So I don't think they regret him. I just think what they need to do is find a couple of midfielders that can play alongside him to make him the player that we all believe he can be.
Derek, your thoughts?
Well, either United are failing to get the best out of him, which means Mourinho is a chump, or he's not as good as we all thought, which makes Mourinho an even bigger chump for paying a billion squillion for him. So in that scenario, we're looking good for the manager. And he's turned Paul Pogba into Paul Parker. Now, you know that's a line, Dave, I've used a few times this season. And I continue to use it until someone has the decency to nick it. I mean, it's a disgrace, Mourinho, I think. I think he's taken Man United back an era. And he's ruined Pogba. I think Pogba's a tremendous player. But it's a fair point Mark makes there about maybe even a player of his calibre hasn't realised the mediocrity he's got to line up with now. I mean, I think this is an awful Man United side, I really do. The fact that they're in second is one of the mysteries of all time. I can't see them finishing there. I can see them going out to the Champions League next week. But I still think Pogba is an absolutely sensational player. I just think he's in the wrong team, under the wrong manager at the wrong time.
I just think United as well, you talk about what Mourinho's done. I mean, in his defence, he inherited a shambles of a squad from Van Gaal, who inherited an aging squad from Moyes. So he's come in there and he's did a lot of work. But, you know, Newcastle last weekend, the back five were on Alex Ferguson signing. So yeah, they've had 5 years since Fergie left and they haven't bought a decent defender in that time. They had Lindelof on the bench and Eric Bailly's decent, but he's never fit. So you've got, you know, two wingers playing at fullback in Valencia and Young. And they've got two centre-halves. Well, you know, Smalling and Jones have had so many opportunities to prove themselves that they keep failing. So I'm amazed that Mourinho, whose success at Chelsea is basically built on the ability to defend, and the same at Inter Milan, but he's still persisting with this awful back four at United when he's had 18 months of massive spending and they've only bought two defenders, like I said, one was never fit and one, Lindelof, looks like one of the biggest duds of the season. So, you know, the jury's still out on that back four, and I think it doesn't help Pogba either because doesn't give him the base to do what he can do.
The miles behind, aren't they, Derek, basically, behind their City rivals?
Yeah, well, he hasn't improved Man United. Every player he's taken over has got worse under him. He's done nothing more than Van Gaal or Moyes did, and they were both disasters.
Hi, it's Pete Farries, and looking at the Championship this week, of course, with the FA Cup, a slightly smaller Championship schedule, I'm going to take Aston Villa at 23-10 to win away at Fulham. Might seem a bit risky, with Fulham having, of course, not lost any of their last five Championship games. In fact, no loss since December for Fulham, when they surprisingly lost away at Sunderland. But Villa are absolutely flying, and they're finding ways to beat good teams amongst that as well. A victory, of course, at Bramall Lane. They beat Middlesbrough, they battered Bristol City. And I think 23-10 is just a bit big on Villa. I'm going to give myself a little bit of safety, because if you're a regular listener, you'll know that I'm a bit of a coward. But I'm going to go for draw no bet Villa here at 11-8. A really nice way in, I think, in a game that could end a draw, but I'm going to take the extra punt for the value on Villa. That's my thoughts on the Championship. Let's head to Gav Puchalowski and his thoughts on League One.
My nap this weekend is all about Gillingham at home to Walsall. Two sides who in the league look pretty side by side. Gillingham are 12th, 44 points. Walsall are 15th, 40 points. So there's not too much to separate these two sides. Walsall do have a game in hand. But the current form guide will show you that Gillingham are one of the best sides over the course of the last six games, picking up 13 points from 18 available, while Walsall are 10th with 10 points from 18 available, but 9 of those 10 points for Walsall have come at home. Walsall are very strong at home at the moment, winning their last three games straight at home, but Walsall on the travels, a very different beast. And in fact, Walsall's last victory away from home did come on the 25th of November last year. Generally, as a rule, Walsall lose a couple, draw one, lose a couple, draw one, and Gillingham, fine form. Winning away at Northampton Town midweek, great result for them. And Gillingham have won 5 of their last 7 games. Their only defeat of late has come away at Wigan, which you can totally understand with Wigan being one of the best sides in League One. So it's as simple as this. My League One nap for this weekend is Gillingham at home to Walsall at 7-5. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
There's only one odds-on price in the whole of League Two this weekend, which is surprising, firstly because Carlisle at home never deserved to be odds-on, second because teams like Stevenage and Cambridge don't deserve to be odds-against. The one that's really made me look, though, is Accrington. There is no way they deserve to be 6-5 at Barnet. Now, I know I have regularly backed against Barnet, and I know they've beaten Notts County at home last time out, but go back and listen to previous podcasts, and you will find that win over County was predicted because of Notts County's cup exploits rather than anything Barnet were doing. And even with that win, the bottom side in the league still have the worst home record in it. A Barnet supporting friend of mine went to the game at Yeovil in midweek and suffice to say he was unimpressed. Then there's Accrington. They've won four in a row. That's as many wins as Barnet have had since September. They've won 8 in 9 home and away and all against better sides than Barnet. And I have banged on about Swindon's wonderful away form this season. Aside from them, the best away form in the league belongs to Accrington. 8 wins in 16 away, so anything over even money would be value anywhere, let alone at the Hive. It's bottom against second, and you're getting odds against on the team chasing the title. Accrington, a 6-5.
That's it for the podcast. Thank you everyone that's tuned in to listen. Check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com. Special thanks to Mark Ogden, our guest from the FWA this week, the senior football writer at ESPN. Available on Twitter as well, Mark, at MarkOgden_. And you can follow myself, any comments you've got about the podcast, at DKellner. And if you're having a punt this weekend, the very best of luck. We'll speak again on Monday.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.